Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach 360, on October 31st, 2014. Happy Halloween! Voted Best Local Radio Show in the Daily Breeze Reader Choice Poll 2014, and we're very proud of that. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Manhattan Beach Chamber has been serving the city of Manhattan Beach for over 60 years, and they are dedicated to promoting a strong local economy by supporting the community, providing valuable business connections, and representing business with government. The chamber staff is focused on providing its membership with the tools and resources to help their businesses grow and thrive within the community. Their goal is to continually support the individual efforts of businesses as they work to support the growth of the local economy. For more information on how the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the city of Manhattan Beach to support that growth, visit their website at manhattanbeachchamber.com or call 310-545-5313. That's 310-545-5313. You can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose. That's what we talk about here on the South Bay Show. And, of course, I'm not alone because of our great partnership with SouthBayByJackie.com and producer of the South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I am doing well this morning, Joe. Happy Halloween.
Boo.
Boo. Do we have any scary stories?
I was thinking about that too, but I'll work on that.
Okay.
You know, it's so important, Jackie, as you well know, as a small business, to have good partnerships. And I always remember a great friend of mine told me that you need to have two great partnerships as a small business. One is a great attorney, and one is a great accountant. And we've got one of the two in the house tonight, or today. Who's our guest today?
Our guest this morning is Patrick Maloney, a resident of Manhattan Beach. Patrick opened his own law firm, the Maloney Firm, APC, in the South Bay in 2012 after practicing for over a decade in a downtown Los Angeles firm. Patrick has successfully represented businesses in employment matters, contract disputes, disagreements among business owners, intellectual property lawsuits, and suits involving allegations of anti-competitive conduct. He graduated with honors from the University of San Diego School of Law in 1998. In 2012, Patrick received an AV rating from the Martindale Hubble, reflecting that his peers recognized him as having the highest of ethical standards and legal ability. And as you mentioned this morning, we will be discussing exactly why it's so important for businesses to have a great relationship with a great attorney. Welcome to the program, Patrick. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. So let's start off right at the top, Patrick. Let's talk about why, and we're primarily talking about small businesses, but I'll let you tell us what kinds of clients you typically have as a single-member law firm. Tell us, what is the standard or the typical customer you have, and what are some of their greatest needs?
Well, you know, actually, we've got three lawyers in our firm, but we've represented everybody from, right now I've got a client who's a sole practitioner dentist that we're assisting with an employment matter to rather large companies that you've heard about.
Hmm.
And the needs of each client really depend on where they are in their life cycle. When we deal with newer companies, they need help making sure that they've got the right processes and procedures and systems in place, because if, for example, they're not properly handling payroll or they're misclassifying employees as independent contractors, they open themselves up to exposure both with respect to claims brought by their law, by their employees, and perhaps regulatory exposure from the Department of Labor and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And then as entities mature and grow, the needs kind of evolve. And for example, when somebody brings in a partner to work in their firm, it's important to make sure that those relationships are well documented and that everybody understands what's happening. And then as companies continue to grow even further, they become larger and subject to more oversight and likely subject to a greater range of lawsuits, whether it be a vendor dispute, a customer dispute, a dispute with a competitor, or a dispute with an employee.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important to take a look at the client at each step of their way and help them identify the risks and exposures and then plug those up so they don't have a problem.
I would assume that you have the same prescription for success. I've known many attorneys, and most of them say the best thing to do is to prevent problems, to use the law and to use your legal resources as a prophylactic, as a preventative. For instance, like you were talking, if you're going to have a partnership, decide how you're going to exit before you even get into the relationship. Decide, you know, the structure of the business and how to part company as friends before you even start the relationship. How do you counsel businesses that are just starting? What's a great way of getting them engaged in this conversation?
Well, a phrase that I use an awful lot when we have these sorts of conversations is prenuptial agreement. And obviously that comes out of the notion of two folks who are marrying and want to figure out how they're going to deal with things in the future. But two partners or more getting into a business together have a lot of the same sorts of issues. And by, you know, in the legal world, in a partnership context, a prenuptial agreement is what I call a buy-sell agreement that defines the terms upon which one individual can buy out the other. And that arrangement can be documented in a variety of ways. For example, if you've got a limited liability company, you would put it in your operating agreement. If you've got a partnership, you could put it in a partnership agreement. You could also create it as a standalone document. But one of the things that I've experienced over the years, unfortunately, when I get a call from somebody who's dissatisfied with their business partner, the first question I usually ask is, well, what do you have by way of documentation that shows your rights? And invariably, the answer is, well, we don't have much, or whatever we had was never completed and never signed.
Mm.
And that puts us in a rough situation where we have to go look at what the law provides under the circumstances as opposed to what the parties agreed upon or what they think they agreed upon. One of the things that's really important about having that discussion up front is that it may prevent you from entering into a partnership where the partnership has different goals, ideals, values, because the discussion about how you're going to part company realizes that you probably shouldn't be together in any event. Mm-hmm. And I think that's absolutely critical. When people are starting a new business, there's often a honeymoon effect, and nothing's ever going to go wrong, and then money starts coming in, and then people start quibbling about how it gets divided.
Yeah, you know what I never thought about, Joe? It's,
mm-hmm.
Seriously, and Patrick, it sounds like you are part therapist.
There are times, particularly in the litigation context, when you end up dealing with people in these sorts of disputes, you end up doing a lot of what we call hand-holding.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes when you end up in one of these partnership disputes, you have a situation that presents oftentimes where you have somebody who has a really great idea, and they link up with somebody who's got the money necessary to exploit that great idea. And in the business world, money is a much more valuable currency oftentimes than the idea, so the person with the money overreaches. So we oftentimes find ourselves dealing with the idea person who feels betrayed by their business partner, and you spend a lot of time hand-holding, providing therapy, trying to help them understand it's going to be all right at the end of the day.
I'm sorry, one of my great friends often referred to the process, Jackie, as a consigliere.
Yeah.
How do you pronounce that word?
Consigliere.
Consigliere.
Yep.
That's right. That's the position, a word popularized by the novel The Godfather, but it is that position that every business, every small business, every big business, medium-sized business needs someone outside of the day-to-day who can look into your business and say, yeah, that structure is good, but that relationship, well, you need more structure there, or that relationship, you need something more formal there because there are these issues, legal, financial. We talked about the two great partners, accountants and lawyers, that you need to deal with. When you see a situation, Patrick, that you think requires a different kind of professional, not an attorney necessarily, is that something that you typically counsel a business owner, bring in a professional of that kind?
Yeah, absolutely. And the lawyers in my firm and I have made a really strong effort through networking and otherwise to develop a strong relationship of referral partners that we can send clients to, because even in the context of law, for example, I've recently been doing work for a not-for-profit where it had special and unique issues, and we made sure that they got in touch with the right sort of not-for-profit lawyer, somebody with a specialty knowledge in that area, and brought them in to help. So it's absolutely critical to have the right experts in the right area. And as my firm continues to grow, I recognize that myself even more. We make sure we bring in the right folks to assist us so that we've got top-notch advice on any issues we need to deal with.
Now, law firms are structured in a particularly unique way. Doing some accounting for law firms, I learned that they are often perhaps always situated, arranged as a partnership. And then there are, you know, in this law firm, there were several lawyers, like 30. And there were people in the law firm that had partners early on that now were in the role of just sort of bringing in clients. But many of the other role players actually did the work behind the scenes, and they would divvy up the payments to the partnership in very strange ways. I mean, there would be all kinds of schemes for dividing the payments so that the accounting was very much an interesting situation, because you divided by client, by matter, and sometimes two or three people would be part of the matter, but the client was someone else's. It was all very interesting. Can you talk a little bit about the structure of law firms?
Boy, that's you could spend days on it. And the issue really is it's tricky. And in fact, we're helping a partner in a small law firm right now divide from his partner because of dissatisfaction of the way they're working. But really, when you step back, they're not so different than a lot of other businesses. Certainly, you've got the folks that own the law firm, and those are generally considered partners, or you know, they have whatever title they have. Law firms often use the term partner, even though they're maybe organized as a corporation, as is my firm. And generally speaking, the hierarchy is you've got the fellow at the top who usually, you know, has got the economic risk in the firm. He or she is responsible for developing the business. And then, generally speaking, as a firm grows, you've got the folks that supervise the business, and then you've got the younger folks, the associates, who do a lot of the work. And oftentimes they stratify those levels as a finder, a minder, and a grinder. And then the interesting tension in law firms, like other businesses we've been touching on, is how do you deal with rewarding each of the individuals in the firm for their contribution in a way that everybody feels they've been fairly treated at the end of the day. And like you point out, there's myriad ways that gets accomplished, whether it's a straight credit for bringing something in at the upper levels, or paying a salary to the folks at the lower levels, or more exotic structures that are designed to encourage and reward good behavior, designed to achieve the best ends of the business.
Right.
I got to ask something. Okay, you know, TV is rife with law shows. Is the profession as exciting as, you know, they make it seem on TV?
Depends on what channel you're watching. If you're watching one of the high number channels where they deal with the cold cases and they show how a lawyer's toiled for 25 years to figure out the killer with lots of dead ends and fits and starts, it's absolutely like that. If you're thinking more along the lines of The Good Wife or a show like that where a case runs its way from start to finish within 35 minutes of the airtime, and every question asked in trial is exciting and what have you. It's nothing like that
at all. Yeah, I was thinking in terms of like L.A. Law and The Good Wife, and it's also it's very it looks all fabulous, you know,
all these
beautiful people, and they all lead very exciting lives.
Yeah, more real life lawyers would do better on radio than on television.
Okay.
There are many hours of tedium in what we do. For example, we're helping somebody with a breach of contract case right now. And it's a classic example of if he had had his own lawyer take a look at the contract on the way in, he might have been able to improve his position and avoid the circumstances that now have led to the lawsuit. Over the last several days, myself and one of my associates have assembled 2,200 pages of documents and put numbers on the bottom of each page so we can track them.
Mm-hmm.
So we can give them to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a lot of fun,
mm-hmm.
But it's an important part of what we do in keeping the information and evidence organized and what have you. And people don't see that, and they certainly don't show that on these exciting television shows.
Mm-hmm.
They don't show the grunt work. They never show the grunt work. It's all very glamorous. Yeah.
Now, on the other side of the coin, one of the last cases I worked on as a trial lawyer before I left my former firm involved the actress Nicolette Sheridan, who sued ABC over her departure from the Desperate Housewives television show.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that.
And so I was the rube who walked into the question of one of the show's executive producers about a couple interesting tidbits of the show. And he announced that another character was going to be killed off on that next episode, which resulted in every reporter who was in the courtroom fleeing for the door so they could break the story. So at that moment, it was very much like you would see on one of these, you know, law shows on television that glamorize this thing. But I can tell you that was 35 seconds out of what now is, you know, a 16-year career.
Right.
It's those 15 seconds you live for.
And we're going to talk about a lot of different aspects of the legal profession. This is great. We are focusing on the legal profession and how it relates to small business and medium-sized businesses and how it can help. But also, there are a lot of alternatives out there now, Patrick, and I want you to speak to those. And when I say alternatives, I don't mean alternatives to lawyers. I mean alternatives to how you pay lawyers, because, you know, most businesses, the reason that they don't get that contract looked over by an attorney is they don't feel they can afford it. But there are services out there, legal services that you pay almost like an insurance service. You pay a little every month, and when you need an attorney's opinion, you get it, but it's part of your package of services and so forth. Can you speak to that? I know that that's one of the things that's really up and coming in the legal profession, even though it's been around for decades.
Yeah, we've run across a few folks that have utilized those types of services, and there are areas where they can be valuable. You know, and a corollary to those types of services is LegalZoom and what have you.
Mm.
And people oftentimes go to LegalZoom or something like that to do their will or trust, and I can tell you that my friends that handle probate matters really are thankful that people sometimes try to do those services themselves or through low-cost providers, because they oftentimes end up in creating issues that were unforeseen.
Mm.
For very routine matters, some of these products can be good because there's not a lot of variability or insight that's required. You know, on the other side of the coin, we recently advised a very large client about an employment contract that was coming out of an acquisition, and it had a lot of wrinkles to it. And you think of generally reviewing an employment contract for a company as something that shouldn't take very much time. And this one took an incredible amount of time because there were issues relating to making sure that the client obtained all the proprietary rights from the company being acquired, that the trade secret information was being transferred to the acquiring company, that the non-compete would be enforceable. The seller of the company was located in Pennsylvania. The company that we were working with has offices both in Massachusetts and California, so we did a choice of law analysis to determine which law in which state would apply and then also which law in which state was going to be more favorable.
Mm-hmm.
We did an analysis with the client and had a detailed discussion on whether or not they wanted to have an arbitration provision in the agreement or whether they wanted to be able to resort to the trial courts in the event of a breach and the various considerations that go along with those things. So something that some folks may think is a very simple project had a lot of wrinkles and ramifications that may not have been fleshed out using something like a LegalZoom. But the ramifications to the client, when the client really understood them, were significant because if, for example, they purchased the company, they hire the former top guy at the company, and then he quits and goes to competitive business, they have essentially paid a lot of money to buy a company but got nothing from that purchase transaction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to measure the project in light of the potential risks and ramifications. And like I say, when we talk about these prenup, the buy-sell agreements that people should put in place, in March of 2013, we went to trial on a matter where the clients never had an arrangement. And at the end of the day, each side invested probably around $500,000 in legal fees.
Oh, my God.
Problem. Yes. It was a very long knockdown, drag-out battle. We won $1.7 million for our client.
Hmm.
But had they spent $5,000 up front, they all would have been able to avoid that problem. So, you know, sometimes an ounce of prevention is far more valuable than a pound of cure. And by the same token, client, you know, new businesses need to be thoughtful where they spend their money, and they shouldn't be wasting it needlessly, and they should be very, very clear and open when they talk to lawyers about what they need, what their budgets are,
mm-hmm.
and what have you. And thoughtful lawyers will be cognizant of that and try and make sure that they provide a solution that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's something we grapple with every day, making sure that we provide value to the client and that providing good quality legal services to the client doesn't end up destroying the client at the same time.
Right, right. Ooh, ouch. $500,000 in legal fees. Whoa.
Yeah, well, and I'll tell you, there was a guy that lost that case, and he paid his lawyers that much, too.
Right.
And so our client was on a contingent fee, so our chunk of the fees were determined by the ultimate award, and we were doing that essentially on a very incentivized basis.
Right.
But you step back and think about it. The other side of the case could have tried to resolve the case earlier and save that money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Due to advice from his attorneys or his own or her own recalcitrance to settle, they didn't and they lost. And
yes.
Whoa.
Well, in partnership dispute issue situations like that are really tricky because, you know, again, drawing on my marriage analogy, they're very emotional. Somebody feels betrayed by the other. And oftentimes that can get in the way of good business judgment.
Mm-hmm.
I've got another client that's in a partnership dispute that's pre-litigation right now, and I've spent a large amount of time trying to make sure that this particular individual understands the various risks, benefits, pros and cons of the resolution that we've been trying to negotiate with the other side versus the same issues related to litigation and what can be accomplished. And I found myself repeatedly saying to this client, you really should think carefully about the advice I'm giving you here, because I'm in favor of you signing the settlement that we've put together. And if you do that, I actually make less money than if you decide to file a lawsuit.
You don't sound like an attorney when you say that, Patrick.
You know, well, I'd rather have this fella refer clients to us down the road in the future because he realizes that we gave him great advice that wasn't self-interested. There's more upside by treating somebody like that right than steering him into an expensive lawsuit where I can see that he may not get the results that he wants.
I see. Yeah. Wow. You know, we're going to take a break, and we're going to be right back with Patrick Maloney of the Maloney Firm, APC. We're talking attorneys and business and how you can have the right representation. And it's a fascinating discussion. We'll be right back. If you'd like to ask a comment or question, please call 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We'd love to have your comment or question. Right now, we'd like to thank a sponsor. Jackie, who do we want to thank today?
Well, Joe, you know, it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. For more information, visit the website at www.bcws.com or call 310-542-0011.
Very good.
All right. I actually have a question for Patrick.
Yes.
It's a different track.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick, in your bio, it said that you were working with a big firm in downtown L.A. Tell us why the switch to your own smaller firm in the South Bay.
Well, and I'll even take it a step further back. When I graduated from law school, I got a job that all my peers would have, you know, killed or died for at a national law firm in San Diego. And I made it there 3 years and decided it wasn't very fun, interesting, or exciting because the odds of ever having that L.A. law moment were virtually non-existent. So at that point in time, I moved up to Los Angeles and spent 10.5 years at the firm that I worked at, where I got tremendous experience and worked with a lot of great folks. But I live in Manhattan Beach. My office is currently located on Rosecrans in Manhattan Beach, and I now have a 5-minute commute.
5 minutes?
Yes.
You really do not sound like an attorney.
it's an interesting situation. When I left the firm, it was early 2012. So I've been practicing law, I guess, 14 years or so at that point in time. And I'd reached the point where I had learned an awful lot from others. And it was time for the student to go out and see if he could be his own master, really.
Right.
And so at that time I started, and it was just myself. I didn't even have a secretary for the first couple months. And then since then, we've built it into our own law office with now 3 lawyers and 3 support staff. And it's been tremendously rewarding, lessons to be learned every day.
Mm-hmm.
Largely doing the same type of work. But it's nice to be close to home for, you know, I have the opportunity to drop off my kids at school.
Right.
I get to get home at a semi-reasonable hour on most nights. I enjoy the community and being close being close to home. And I don't miss the nearly 1 hour trek that I made every single day to downtown
right.
LA.
Well, I wanted to ask you, did you always live in Manhattan Beach, or were you in LA or in another part of LA, and then you moved to Manhattan Beach, and then you never wanted to leave it? basically.
Well, we've lived in the South Bay for, I guess, the better part of a decade now as well.
Mm-hmm.
When I first came up to L.A. from San Diego after college and law school and my first law firm, I lived on the West Side and then moved down to the South Bay because we've got a lot of longtime family friends and what have you here in the South Bay. I never wanted to live downtown.
Right.
And certainly when I moved to Los Angeles back in 2001, downtown L.A. was a much different place than it is now with all the redevelopment that's been occurring over the last several years.
Yeah, 15 years ago, it was not a place you would live.
We hear lots and lots of stories. Jackie's sort of following a standard pattern with us, is to find out how people have rearranged their professional lives to make it and to really, you know, prioritize life work balance. And it's something that people in the South Bay are able to do because we live in such a wonderful community where there is possibilities for a life-work balance because the clients are here. You can create a law firm here because the clients are here, and you can make a go of it, and that's the wonderful thing. Give us a little bit more insight into how the Maloney firm is doing now, the types of different types of law that you practice.
Well, we help clients with a range of things. My associate, Ashley, who is also a South Bay resident, she lives over in Redondo, does a lot of employment work, and she helps clients with things from refining their employment contracts, as we talked about, their injury prevention programs, handbooks, things of that nature. She represents clients at the Department of Labor down in Long Beach when they're accused of, you know, not paying people properly, and also in more sophisticated matters that are filed in the Superior Court. And then I generally I supervise her and work on those matters with her. I handle a lot of these partnership disputes that we see in various types of business disputes. We also have developed a specialty in representing clients in disputes with their lawyers over charges and things of that nature. That's kind of one of my pet projects that's an offshoot of some of the things that we've seen other lawyers do to folks. And then we recently added a very young lawyer who his primary goal right now is to be a sponge and learn as much as he possibly can so he continues to develop his skill set and be able to serve clients at the highest level.
I have a 25-year-old daughter, and my wife and I have often thought with her verbal skills and her quick wit and so forth that she would make a good attorney. Talk a little bit about the onboarding of attorneys and the profession. Do you think, would you counsel your children to become attorneys?
Well, that's a multifaceted answer. And our son, who is 7, might be able to out-argue me at this point. So I don't know if I'm going to have any say on what he does, and he's likely headed to be a lawyer. And my daughter, who's 5, recently said she wants to be a lawyer because she can argue with people on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really understand what they're talking about. But, you know, there are aspects to the profession that really are hard for people to understand. When you do what I do, which is primarily litigation-based with a focus with some consulting and counseling work as well, every single day we go to work and every single day when we get to work, we're in a contest with somebody else where oftentimes there's a defined winner and loser. And so the level of stress can be remarkable in that regard. And nobody tells you that on the way in.
Mm.
You know, when you apply for law school, there's no big red notice up top that says you will be in a combative environment for the remainder of your life. It will be stressful. so there's that element of it, you know, and there's ways that you can avoid that. For example, there's a lot of great lawyers in the South Bay that do trust and estate work, helping people plan their financial futures, and that's going to be less combative usually.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the bigger issue, and there's been a lot of press on this lately, is that law school is a remarkably expensive proposition.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go to the best college you can and do the best you can at the college level, and then you need to get accepted to the best law school you can get into and do the best you can at that level. So you're talking about 7 years of post-high school education.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you're, you know, made of money, in which case you probably don't need to have a job that pays well, oftentimes folks are going into tremendous levels of debt to get done. And that's something that any aspiring lawyer should really be counseled upon, is what sort of debt obligations you can be taking on.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to the end of law school, if you haven't gone to one of the top law schools and performed very well in your academic career in law school, the job prospects can be very rough. The people who do well at the large, you know, high-end law schools usually have a great job waiting with a salary starting, you know, the mid $100,000 range. You know, I think the starting salary for the top guys at the top firms is on the order of $160,000. Conversely, if you're somebody who is outside the elite level, even at a good local school, or highly recognized school like USC or UCLA, you might find that you make your starting salary is $70,000 a year, and if you've got the equivalent of a $225,000 student loan debt on top of that, you're going to be continuing to eat top ramen for years to come.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a daunting undertaking. But for the right person with the right skill set, it can be very advantageous. And the way you make the money in the legal profession these days, like so many others, is by having the talent to attract clients. Law firms pay more for people who are successful at marketing the firm and attracting clients than they do to really great lawyers who don't have clients. So it's a really interesting thing to watch as it evolves.
Now there are so many professions which are considered white collar professions versus blue collar professions. I'm now reading a book, Who Owns the Future? Who Owns the Future? By a gentleman by the name of Jaron Lanier. He's a they call him scholar in residence at Microsoft. He is considered by many to be the father of virtual reality. He's a very well-respected thinker in the tech world. And he has this book, Who Owns the Future, that kind of explains from his point of view why the music industry was destroyed by computer technology and how that same scenario is going to be repeated industry by industry by industry, including professions like the medical profession. When you have robotic doctors that can perform surgeries 10 a day, 20 a day at very, very high levels of skill, far exceeding the abilities, the physical abilities of a human doctor even. Not just the skill, but no doctor in his right mind could do 20 surgeries a day. So they call it the information and software mitigation or mediation of a particular service. Once it becomes software mediated, then it becomes amenable to information technology, which means it becomes a different kind of profession. Do you see any of those aspects to the legal profession on the horizon? I'm not saying that computers can replace an attorney, but when do you think that'll happen, if ever?
Well, there's a handful of ways that we see that crop up. For example, if you're what I call the family next door, normal people, not exorbitant wealth, what have you, but doing well, you want to get trust and estate planning documents to protect your heirs and what have you. That's a lot of papers that, you know, can be cut and pasted and generated quickly and easily and what have you. So that would really be one example where we see that the information technology processes that are coming along make it easy for people to replicate and redo work quickly, easily, and for the client's sake, economically as well.
Mm-hmm.
The other area where we see a lot of it these days is that many of our cases require review of remarkably large amounts of documentation. For example, when you think about, you know, the Apple and Samsung patent fights that occurred over the last several years, those lawyers probably had to compile, review, and exchange with one another millions of pages of documents.
Right.
And historically, that had been done by individuals, one page at a time. And through the use of technology and what have you, they've been able to clarify and winnow down the overall mass of documents to a smaller subset that requires actual review. And that's one of the issues that is impacting the profession when I talk about what are the career prospects for young lawyers. Certainly those jobs are being eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, really understanding in the nature of a client's problem or standing up in front of a jury and giving a closing argument are things that I don't know the computer can ever take over for us.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to focus on, if you want to continue to be in a position to charge, high hourly rates that are financially beneficial for the lawyer, you need to focus on those areas where the commoditization or technology are not going to push you out of the job.
Right. And is there any pressure now? This is just a generic question for me. Is there any pressure now? We see, eDoctors.com, and I just got a notice from my medical insurance provider that they now have a service where I can just call, talk to a doctor or talk to a nurse, and talk through some medical issue that I have prior to going to a doctor in person, and certainly not going to the emergency room. Are services like that are legal services where you can talk to an attorney, are those going to have any impact on the profession in the short term?
That's an interesting question because we spend an awful lot of time providing an awful lot of free advice as part of our firm's marketing and also part of our firm's screening of incoming cases. So it's not uncommon that somebody calls me with a legal problem and I end up spending an hour on the phone and they offer to pay, and I usually say it's not even worth it because by the time I set up the file and put all the processes in place for you to pay me for 1 hour of time, I'd rather you just think of that I'm a nice guy. But those types of programs, can be very advantageous. For example, in the legal area, somebody might call the L.A. County Bar Association because that's the only place they know to go to seek out legal advice. And the L.A. County Bar has a referral panel, which I'm a member of, which results in a case being sent to us here and there. And so in some respects, you might say we benefit from that because we've aligned ourselves with some of these programs. Mm-hmm. I also think it's very good from the perspective of people getting some advice or at least becoming aware that they need more advice so that they don't make bad decisions. We really care about a lot of our clients. So, we wish that they would have gotten the information they needed up front to avoid the legal problems they find themselves in when they show up on our doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of those services are good. Whether they have an overall impact on the size of the market for our services such as those provided by my firm, it's really hard for me to have a good answer at this point.
Well, Joe, I don't know that I would, whether it's a doctor or a lawyer, I don't know that I would want to just ring, go online. I mean, I don't know these people. I don't know their qualifications. I don't know how good they are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you think it's something simple, I think anything that involves law could, it could turn into so much more. I just, like my doctors, if I have something, if I have to have rotator cuff surgery, I'm going to talk to as many people I know and get the best referral possible.
Mm-hmm.
I know too many people that have gone in and had botched surgeries 2-3 times before they finally make it to, Curl and Job. What I mean? And I feel the same way about an attorney. I don't know that I would blindly just ask somebody that I don't know them, their credentials, their qualifications. I wouldn't ask them for advice.
Well, we often say to folks, that free advice is worth exactly what you paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's, and the interesting point being is oftentimes you really need to peel back the layers on a client's problem and understand the issues at a greater level and degree than can be done in a short 20-minute phone call.
Right.
And sometimes clients don't tell you all the details on the way in the first time you ever speak.
I was just going to ask you that. Do people, because on the TV shows they always do that, you know, they come in and they say one thing, and then, as you said, you peel back the layers, and you're like, why didn't you tell me this at the beginning? They always do that in shows.
Well, and there's a handful of things that go along with it. First and foremost, people don't oftentimes know exactly what is relevant and what information they should be sharing or that you need to know. And so sometimes it takes a little bit of time to get to know the client, their business, their issues, and their problems to determine what it is you want to know. And then beyond that, sometimes you need to develop trust in a good relationship with the client before they feel comfortable even telling you the issues. You know, we've had a variety of situations. One came up recently where a client got a little squeamish and squirrely when we said we need to access his computer to make sure we have all the relevant documents off his computer.
Uh-oh.
We started scratching our heads saying, what else is on that computer? to be perfectly honest, I don't care what else is on there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people have things in their skeletons in their closet they don't want to tell you about.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those are very relevant to finding the solution to their problem.
Mm-hmm.
So at times it's an interesting dance with a client to be able to give the best advice. And, you know, but if folks reach out to one of these types of services that Joe describes and they learn that they need to be referred to somebody like myself or one of the other lawyers in town I know or work with, that right there is a benefit because they've realized they've got a problem that they can't solve on their own, and now they're getting advice that may prevent that problem from becoming a bigger issue down the road.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think you know, in terms of these services where, like, my insurance provider is providing a conversation with a nurse or a doctor, it isn't to solve a difficult problem, it's to categorize the problem and determine if you need further, more professional services than a phone call can provide. And that, I think that's something that people need to do more. I'm arguing that people need to utilize attorneys more and not fear the cost. That's the key, right?
Yeah, like I say, I really believe the ounce of prevention is worth far more than that pound of cure.
Right.
You know, we recently had a small medical practice call us up and seek advice before they were going to let two nurses go.
Mm.
And, you know, so far, knock on wood, several months have gone by and those nurses haven't claimed that they've been wrongfully terminated because of the way that we helped the client handle the termination. And, you know, I don't even remember what that client paid us, but it was nothing compared to what it would be.
Yeah.
To defend a lawsuit brought by one of these employees, even if it's successful. So, you know, I really do believe that it makes a lot of sense for people to at least make the call and have a lawyer chime in. And going back to your concept, the notion of triaging the problem on the way in.
Mm.
The other thing that we've seen is clients who try to do legal work for themselves and botch it. In a really simple example is a recent matter we were involved in where the company let somebody go. They then gave what they thought was a severance package and prepared the settlement documentation whereby the party employee would release all of the claims that they might have against the employer in exchange for this modest payment.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the settlement package wasn't drafted correctly. And it required a release in exchange for a final paycheck that was undisputedly due. The employee was entitled to be paid for their last week of work. And because the final paycheck was created to be a quid pro quo for the release, that release wasn't valid. And the client had to then deal with a lawsuit. And for the want of, you know, 3 or 4 hours of professional time, making sure that it was handled correctly, what would have been a done deal as far as a settlement package resulted in a new lawsuit being filed that had to be defended.
Hmm. Wow. That hurts.
Yeah, it's really frightening. You know, and there's other things happening. For example, in the last couple of months, the California Court of Appeal in the area of employment law said that employers are now required to reimburse their employees for cell phone charges related to the employee's work.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the employee is on a cell phone plan that has got unlimited minutes such that the work-related calls don't increase the cost of the employee of the cell phone use.
Hmm.
There's currently a California employer is being sued in a class action lawsuit on that very issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a local business doesn't think about that, doesn't know that law exists, doesn't properly address it in its employment handbook, they might find themselves, due to this new esoteric law, suffering a lawsuit from a client. And in a related vein, the sole practitioner dentist that I've mentioned, we're defending her in an employment case where she didn't have an employee handbook.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, an employee handbook will indicate to the employees that they're all at will and can be terminated for any reason at any time, so long as it's not an illegal reason.
Mm-hmm.
Had this client of ours had an employment handbook, she would have been able to win her entire case with a motion, but now she unfortunately faces a trial. So that's the sort of thing where somebody thinking about starting a business and bringing on employees, really by spending a little bit of time with a lawyer, and as you mentioned, Joe, a really good accountant,
mm-hmm.
can make sure that they've got the processes and procedures in place to prevent downstream problems. And so oftentimes the excitement, enthusiasm for this new venture and telling everybody in the world and setting up the web page and the Facebook page overshadows the basic legal protections that these folks should be looking for.
This Patrick, this has been tremendously valuable to sit down with you. In a sense, our audience has had a chance to sit down with you and really get a sense of what a good attorney would give them in terms of advice. And I think that's the thing that is missing. Many people don't have a relationship with a good attorney. I happen to have had a wonderful friendship relationship with an attorney who was my boss previously. And we became great friends, great family friends. And the ability for someone to sit down with a friend who's also an attorney and have these kinds of discussions is just missing in society today. People, you know, are out there on their own, and they don't really have that kind of advice and counsel.
Joe?
Yes?
Can we do a station break? We
need
to get one more commercial in.
Let's do that. We are thrilled. We're talking with Patrick Maloney of the Maloney Firm, APC. And the title of the show is Why an Attorney is Important for Your Business. I think if you listen to the show, you'll know why, and that's really key. Please share this with all your friends and family so that they know why an attorney is very important for your new or your existing business in transition or whatever. And now, a station break. Jackie?
The South Bay Show is brought to you by Shade Hotel, nestled in the heart of downtown Manhattan Beach and steps away from the Pacific Ocean. Shade offers a unique seaside experience. With its stylish decor, casual beach vibe, and personalized service, Shade provides the perfect setting to unwind. Guests will enjoy Zinc's award-winning cuisine prepared by executive chef Chris Karasik and signature handcrafted cocktails. A short stroll away from the hotel, guests will find boutique shopping, a vibrant nightlife, and an array of beach-centric activities. Shade's individual spaces are designed with the flexibility to hold a variety of functions, such as weddings, business meetings, fundraisers, and more. Whether your next event is hosted in the signature courtyard, on Zinc Terrace, or atop the beautiful sky deck, Shade has a space for every occasion. There's a reason Condé Nast Traveler listed Shade as one of the top 100 hotels in the world, and the number 6 reason to visit Los Angeles, it's cooler in Shade. For more information and to book your reservation, visit www.shadehotel.com or call 310-546-4995.
There you go. It's cooler in
Shade. Got to get those
sponsors
in. You got to get those sponsors in.
Yes. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Exciting. Patrick, it's really been great. Wonderful. Can you give us, Patrick, the contact information for the Maloney Firm?
Certainly. We can be found on the web at maloneyfirm.com, which is MaloneyFirm.com. And then our general line to the office, which can then allow you to be directed to any of us, is area code 310-540-1505. Again, that's 310-540-1505. And then if anybody wants to shoot me an email, I can be reached at pmaloney@maloneyfirm.com.
Okay. Now, I'm at maloneyfirm.com. It looks very solid, with a picture of the LA skyline. Business Trial Lawyers. Very solid. Would be a final word, Patrick, that you would give to the listeners about their relationship to the legal profession? How should they view, as a business owner, their relationship to the legal profession?
Well, I think any business owner, you know, and you've said it really well, should have a good accountant and good a lawyer on speed dial, basically. And they can put one or the other, you know, first on their call list, but try to find somebody who can both be a counselor and a resource and who has access to the resources that they can provide. I think it's just absolutely prudent when you're embarking on a profit-making enterprise in today's world to have good advice. And really to plan and think through where you're going. And both lawyers and accountants can do a great job helping clients, you know, map out where their business is going to go and help them avoid the risks of missteps.
Right.
I think it's always a good idea. I think it's especially important to have these relationships in place before you need them, you know, to know people. You know, if you're a business or even if you're thinking about going into business, you should have counsel of an attorney and an accountant, at least those two, before you even have to do anything. I know this might sound a little silly, but in my glove compartment in my car, I have three cards for a couple of attorneys and a police chief. If I ever get into trouble, they're literally at my fingertips. All right. So I'm ready. You know, I've got you got to be prepared.
It sounds like,
you know, I would just say this: when we started my law firm, before we figured out whether we were going to be an LLC or a professional corporation or an LLP or whatever, before we got through all of those information, I went and met with an accountant and said, "What's going to give me the best tax situation, flexibility, and what have you?" And got that advice before we even decided the choice of entity. And I think that really highlights that when a lawyer who deals with these problems is seeking out that sort of professional advice,
right,
it highlights even more so how somebody who's embarking on their first go-it-alone business venture can greatly benefit from getting the right advice up front.
Right.
Yes.
Wonderful show, wonderful advice. This is why we do this. This is why the Chamber is sponsoring this show on Fridays at 8 a.m. We hope that you will join us every Friday at 8 a.m. for Manhattan Beach 360. It's all about preparing you as a business owner to do better, to be better. We have shows about local zoning issues, local all kinds of issues, and then of course the professional services that you really can utilize to make your business more profitable and more secure. This is what we do. Thank you so much, Patrick Maloney, for joining us today.
Well, thank you, folks. I can't believe an hour has already flown by.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, it is really amazing. And it's when you have a great conversation like this, it really goes by fast. What would be a cap on this? Anything more to say, Jackie?
Oh, no, nothing here.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
And we'll see you again soon. Have a happy and safe Halloween. Be safe. Be be watch out for the little ones. I don't know if it's going to rain tonight or what, but they said it might hold off. So be safe, and we'll see you again on Tuesday for Disaster in America at 7 a.m. on Tuesday. Bye-bye now. Have a great weekend.